Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Alexander Audio, and today my guest is Joni Mercer, an Alexander Technique teacher in Austin, Texas. She's been a teacher for over 35 years, and like myself, she studied quite a bit with a well-known Alexander Technique teacher, Marjorie Barstow, who lived almost her entire life in Lincoln, Nebraska. And well, except for 2 years before she arrived and a few years in England when she trained to become a teacher. And we're going to talk today about Marge's teaching and what made it so unique and what we got from it and what I think it's fair to say our students are indirectly getting from it. Joni, welcome to the show.
Oh, Robert, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, this is going to be fun. I just
yes.
know it.
Yes.
Maybe a good place to start would be we could sort of trade off a bit here, but what was your first introduction to her, and what did you make of her when you first met her?
Well, my first introduction to Marge was over the phone. It was 1970.
Ooh, prehistory. Wow.
And yeah. I had been getting Rolfed.
Uh-huh.
And I was also in a teacher training program to be a Neo-Reichian breath release therapist and Gestalt psychotherapist. And the man who was leading that program, because in that program we did hands-on work, we would touch each other's bodies, he says, you know, you've got something special in your hands, and I think you should actually turn in the direction of Alexander Technique. And I had no idea what that was. And I was talking to my Rolfer, Drew Ford, about it. And he said, you know, I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska. That's where I grew up. And the best Alexander teacher in the whole world is in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Wow. What a happy set of coincidences, huh?
Yeah. I just got on the phone and I called Marjorie Barstow and I said, I want to come study with you. And she said, come on out.
Yeah, I can just imagine that. Yeah, and when you first met her, and you had your first work with her, what was your initial reaction to it?
Well, I could breathe.
Yeah.
For the first time, you know, I was a swimmer when I was growing up, and I had just begun to swim again that summer when I went out to see Marge, but I wasn't very good at it anymore. And I remember before I met her, and we were all at the DU fraternity house, mm-hmm. I went swimming at the University of Nebraska, and I could barely do 8 laps. Mm-hmm. And the first lesson with Marge, she, as we say, she took us up, and she took me up, and it was like I was home in my body. Mm-hmm. And my breath was clean and easy. And I just felt coordinated, and I felt like I could turn my head with so much grace.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I went swimming that evening, and I swam a mile easily because my breathing had completely changed from one lesson.
Yeah, I can totally believe that. Marge had extremely light but powerful hands, I guess I would say.
Totally. You know, Robert, I remember one of my last lessons with Marge, and I think she was about 99.
It would be 89, probably.
Well, 89.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was sitting in a chair, and I was just standing next to her, and she took my hand, and she took my fingers.
Yeah.
And I just went right on up. And that was the strength of her intention and her direction.
Yeah, her final years, she died in 1995 at the age of almost 96, I believe. And her final few years, she was homebound mostly. She had home health aides looking after her. But she taught right up until about a year, I would say, before she died. And it was as you described, she would often be sitting in a chair, and if she did get up, there'd always be someone behind her to make sure she didn't fall backwards, because the osteoporosis had really taken its toll at that point. But she could, with just a touch, she could just produce incredible results. And even one of the home health aides once asked me after a couple of people had been over there working with her, she asked me, is it possible that, because I'm feeling a lot lighter right now, and is it possible it has something to do with Marge? And I said, yep, entirely possible. She kind of radiated direction, I would say.
Absolutely. She was so one-pointed.
Yeah.
That's an expression we use in spirituality, but her intention. Mm-hmm. That means that the intention was so clear, so mm-hmm. crystal clear,
right,
that our direction would be up and grounded at the same time.
Absolutely. Right.
And, you know, Robert, I would love to share a story with you.
Sure.
Because I had an experience with Marge that I think very few people have had, mm-hmm. which is Marge got angry with me one time.
Mm.
And
you weren't the only person she got angry with, by the way, but yeah.
Let me tell you, at the time, it really felt like it.
Yeah.
And I'd love to share that experience.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
We were at Washington University in St. Louis, and I was one of the people assisting her teaching in the performing arts department. And I don't know if you remember Sid. I think it was Sid Friedman who was the head of the drama department there, and he was very, very tall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was very tall. Actually, I'm going to tell you two stories. And I'll start with this one because it sort of leads up to the second one. And I'm very vertically challenged. I'm not even 5 feet. Mm-hmm. So, and he's about 6'5". So I pulled a chair over.
Uh-oh, I can see it coming.
And Marge came over to me and she said, "What do you think you're doing?" And I said, "Marge, he's so tall." And she said, "Well, you just lengthen up."
Yeah.
And she worked on me while I reached up to work with Sid.
Right.
And it was incredible. But yeah. She was going to have none of me standing on chairs. This was pretty early on.
Right.
Now, the second incident that happened at this same workshop in St. Louis was a little hairier. We were in a graduate seminar, and some of the graduate students started to really question Marge, and I felt very, very protective of her. And I started to intervene and protect her. And she gave me a look, and that was all I needed, just a look. And she stopped me. And then later on that day in the afternoon when we were all working, she came up to me and she started working with me. And she blasted me. And she was working with me, so I was wide open. But she was talking to me in this very soft, very quiet, very deliberate voice about what I had done. And I mean, it was the best of all lessons. Of course, I went into the bathroom and I cried for about an hour afterwards. And it was such a great lesson in boundaries and in what's appropriate. And I left that day and I was pretty torn up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was staying at my cousin's house in St. Louis. And there was a phone call for me and it was Marge. And she invited me to come to tea the next day.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. And it was just such a lesson in being graceful and being well-mannered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that she taught her teachers. You know, we used to go to her house and we'd have meals.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the young men who came, they didn't have manners. And she'd have them setting the table. And she taught us how to be people in the world.
Yeah, I think one thing that we should, in all fairness, should say is that one of Marge's quirks, if you like, is that she did tend to be a lot harder on women than men. I don't know whether you ever happened to notice that, but guys could get away with more with her, in my experience. But that's just a kind of a side thing. Now, you know, one thing that's really intriguing about Marge, I think, is that, you know, we've talked about how powerful her hands were, and they were, and certainly in my experience, I've never experienced anything like that from any other teacher. But in fact, when she was teaching workshops, for example, she used her hands pretty sparingly. And the emphasis of her teaching was, until the very end of her life, when there was a seismic shift. But for most of her time I knew her, she was really emphatic about people taking responsibility for themselves and doing their own thinking and learning. And of course, she would use her hands to help people with that. But the last thing she wanted was to have people dependent on her hands.
Oh, Robert, I think that's a totally accurate observation. And before this conversation that you and I are having, I was contemplating working with Marge. And some of the words that came to my mind were a delicacy of movement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She used to emphasize it's a delicacy. It's delicate. It's tiny. And her hands gave us just enough guidance and just enough information so that our own kinesthetic sense that was within us joined with her intention and her touch, and it was ours. We owned it. It wasn't something that was imposed on us.
Right. She used to say that that when she was using her hands, she was, in a sense, doing our thinking for us, but it was just enough to get us to start doing our own thinking.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't meant to be a long-term thing in a way. She was showing you some possibilities and giving you some ways of thinking about how you might get those yourself. But I would say, in her mind at least, the hands part, spectacular as it was secondary to the verbal interaction that she would have with people.
It was. And sometimes she did go. I remember one time I asked her if she would give a table lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And this was early on, and everybody sort of gasped. Because
right.
Marge just didn't give table lessons.
Right.
And she said, okay, why don't we just use the floor?
Right.
And I said, Marge, I want to know exactly what you're doing with your hands. And she said, well, I'm doing three things. I'm finding out what you're doing with your body. I'm helping you to stop the habits. And then I'm helping you to understand a new direction
mm-hmm.
to take yourself.
Right.
And I thought, wow, you know, that's really great information to have. And then another time, I wanted to sing because everybody else was singing and I'd never done any singing in my life because everybody had always said I couldn't sing. I didn't have a good voice. And her touch was so delicate and so gentle, and yet it took me into a relationship and a space with my breath where I was singing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I almost passed out because I had so much air.
Right.
And
right.
She used her hands to just sort of steady me, but it was so delicate.
Right, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, singing... As you know,
oh yeah, the cowboy singer.
I am the cowboy singer. Yeah, singing. We should say that in her workshops, she pretty much worked with people doing various activities. It could be just sitting in a chair, but it typically would change into walking or
juggle
anything. I mean, absolutely. It was there was no limit to what the activities were, but singing or anything musical had a kind of special. It was almost like a special category because you knew that if you said I'd like to sing or play an instrument, it would immediately attract her attention because she enjoyed that.
Well, she liked us to take this thinking into activity.
Right. And singing and musical performance or dance or anything like that.
Well, she loved being entertained.
Yeah. She wanted to be entertained. Exactly. So out of a kind of a desire to get more hands-on work, a little end-gaining on my part, I thought, well, I'm not really a singer, but I do love country and Western, and I'm just going to get up and start singing some of the classics, and I'm not going to worry that maybe it didn't sound like Hank Williams, but, you know, it was a way of getting work, and I enjoyed it, and it was something I would do in the shower at home, so, yeah.
Well, and another piece of this is that Marge was always asking us to go beyond.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Go beyond.
Take a gambling chance.
Now, something else that we haven't talked about is that Marge sang.
Really?
And Marge, yes.
I had no idea about that.
Marge had a song that she used to sing because sometimes we would all get just a little bit too serious.
Uh-huh.
And Marge would say, well, I think we ought to take a break and sing a song.
Mm-hmm.
And she would sing this song about a peanut on a railroad track.
Oh, my God. Yes, I have heard that. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And would you like me to sing it for you?
Go for it.
Okay. A peanut sat on a railroad track. His heart was all a flutter. Around the bend came number 10, choo-choo peanut butter.
Yeah, and you can actually hear a student of hers singing that song on one of the videos of Marge.
It would crack us up.
It would, yeah. Joni, anything else you want to say about Marge?
Oh, just
we haven't touched on?
You know, only that I could never thank her enough for what she's given me. You know, that I invoke her every time I give a lesson and thank her in my heart because she's with me all the time.
Yeah, you know, I could say this. I could say the same thing. Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And Robert, I've even had dreams where she'll come to me and make corrections in my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think she's still, you know, she's in our hearts. And so she's still very, very present and that she has made a contribution to the body of knowledge of the Alexander technique that's invaluable.
Yeah, my theory about her is that, you know, she was the first graduate of Alexander's first training course. And she came back to the States, worked for several years as F.A.R. Alexander. Alexander's brother was teaching in Boston and New York. And she was his assistant for several years. And then she came back to Lincoln, I think at the eve of World War II. And I always had this idea that, consciously or not, she was, in a sense, dispatched by Alexander into an area far away from London.
Yes.
Specifically to avoid all the junk that was going to happen in London after he died, or even while he was still alive. The nastiness.
Well, you know, she kept it pure.
She kept it pure, and she developed it in a way that was, by the time I met her, which was the late 70s, she had really developed a way of teaching that was extremely different from anything I had encountered in London. I was halfway through my training course when I came over here to study with her. And I remember thinking, looking around at the workshop and thinking, you know, if Alexander showed up and he was asked about it, he would say, oh, wow, this is certainly an interesting direction Marge has taken. I didn't really teach that way myself very much, but I totally get what she's about, and I'm very very happy about it.
Absolutely.
Because she did. If one thing you can say about Marge was sticking to principle was a very big aspect of her work.
Well, you know, Marge, she still practiced Whispered Oz. Yep. She still practiced monkeys. And she taught us those things in a way that we could integrate them into our daily life and into our daily activity. And that was the beauty of her teaching, was that she really stuck to the principles and experimented.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
She said, we had to take it. We have to do it for ourselves. We have to discover for ourselves what Mr. Alexander discovered.
Right. And we have to take chances and experiment. And the opening chapter of Use of the Self, Evolution of a Technique, is something that she was constantly referring to and constantly telling people to read it and reread it and reread it. And she had a copy of it with the pages were practically falling out of the book and little notes in the margins. And what she would sometimes say is the most important sentence in that chapter is the one where Alexander says, you know, I tried a great many things, too numerous to mention here, and they didn't work. You know, mm-hmm. that idea of the experimenter who is both the experimenter and the experimentee, which mm-hmm. is a very tricky thing to be positioned mm-hmm. to be in mm-hmm. and requires practice and skill. It's not like doing a physics experiment in the lab where you push a few buttons and then out comes the reading. You are observing yourself, which,
yes,
you know, and is fraught with potential problems.
And one thing I want to say about that, Marge had humility. Mm-hmm. And I think that to observe oneself and work with oneself in the way that Alexander did and the way that he taught Marge, one develops humility.
Yeah, she had humility, but she also was not afraid to say something like sometimes after a workshop, after I'd been out there for a while out here for a while in Lincoln, she'd say to me, you know, I think I did a pretty good job on
well,
that one.
There's you know? There's nothing yeah. lacking in humility about yeah. recognizing that we have greatness in us.
But she also was always trying to figure out how to do better. In fact, on one of the videos, that's a short excerpt from a workshop she gave in 1990-91, there's a scene where she's starting out the class and she, or maybe it's an answer to a question, but she's saying, you know, last night I stayed up late thinking about how I could answer that question better than I did yesterday.
That's how she worked.
She was always wanting to improve her teaching and how she was able to convey the information. And in that regard, I don't know, were you studying with her into the mid-80s?
The last time I saw her was in the 90s.
Right. Well, you know, back in the early 80s, some of those workshops got to be pretty huge. Like there could be 100 people in a room with her, 83, 84, 85 yep. in there. And I used to wonder what she was going to do when the number doubled or tripled. But in fact, that didn't happen. But one of the things that Marge seemed to happen is she developed ways of getting the basic information across much more quickly, so that by the late 80s, people were making changes much, much faster. Everything was kind of speeded up, and there was a certain dropout aspect to that. There were some people who really couldn't keep up with that, or it was just too much for them. Although the system was always very open to newcomers, but I think everything went a lot faster.
Well, you know, this kind of goes back to our discussion about spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Marge really practiced the principles. We had the benefit of her practice.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when that happens, people catch on faster. It's an exponential change in consciousness.
Yeah, it was pretty dramatic,
people,
actually.
And
yeah.
I want to make one more point about this. People who are stuck in wanting that individual attention, or I want her hands more, if you get stuck in that, then you are going to drop by the wayside.
Yeah, and in fact, what happened on at least two or three occasions that I can remember is that someone would show up from the past, and someone who perhaps had studied with Marge in the 70s, mm-hmm. now 10, 12 years later, they come, and sometimes that was just fine, but sometimes they would be kind of upset and wanting her to teach the way she used to. And I saw that on a number of occasions, and I remember thinking, that's too bad, because really what you're getting now is like what you used to 3.0 or 4.0. It's much more powerful teaching.
Because the more delicate, the more subtle, the more powerful.
Exactly. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I think we've gotten into some pretty wonderful ground here.
Yeah, Marge was Marjorie Barstow was a very special teacher, and
we were very lucky.
We were all of us incredibly fortunate to find out about her.
Yes.
So my guest today has been Joni Mercer, who's like myself, has been a longtime student of Marjorie Barstow of Lincoln, Nebraska. And Joni lives and teaches in Austin, Texas. She's been a teacher for over 35 years. Joni, thanks so much for this.
And Robert, thank you so much.